Carersweek.com.au, which is a
wonderful
website that they can visit.
Okay, thank you so much, Martin and Yuki Sakakibara, the parents of BMX Olympic gold medalist. News time, 7 o'clock.
ABC News, good morning, I'm Sam Wilkinson. The Lebanese Health Ministry says 18 people have been killed and more than 90 injured in Israeli airstrikes in the centre of the capital, Beirut. Middle East correspondent Eric Torchek reports.
The strikes hit a building in Ras El Naba, far from Beirut's southern suburbs where most Israeli attacks have been. Footage from the scene showed extensive damage to the area, a residential neighbourhood near Beirut's downtown. Multiple ambulances were seen attending, and witnesses say a petrol station was hit. Some reports suggested a senior Hezbollah figure was the target of the strike. The neighbourhood is not associated with the militant group and has not been struck before. Israel had issued warnings for specific parts of the southern suburbs, but not this area of the city. Eric Twarczyk, ABC News, Beirut.
Australians fleeing the growing military conflict zone in Lebanon are facing calls to pay for their flights home. The opposition says for months thousands of people have ignored travel warnings to leave the Middle East and are now relying on taxpayer-funded repatriation flights. Shadow Foreign Minister Simon Birmingham says those who have not followed official advice should pay for the cost of getting back.
The default should be that everybody makes a contribution according to what it would cost for commercial airfare to get out. For those who have genuine humanitarian situations or compassionate arguments, then they can be assessed on case by case.
And another repatriation flight from Lebanon has touched down in Sydney overnight. The government has assisted more than 1,600 Australians, permanent residents and their families to leave Lebanon. Over 3,500 Australians and their immediate family members registered with DFAT as wanting to evacuate the country. The UN says at least 400,000 people are trapped in northern Gaza as an Israeli offensive enters its seventh day. Natalie Whiting reports from Jerusalem.
Israel issued evacuation orders for northern Gaza as its troops re-entered the region. It includes the city of Jabalia, where there's a large refugee camp. The IDF says the operation is based on intelligence that Hamas is regrouping in the area. The United Nations estimates there are 400,000 people in the region and many aren't leaving because there's nowhere safe to go. Palestinian health authorities say at least 130 people have been killed in the operation. In a separate strike, 28 people have been killed who were sheltering in a school in central Gaza.
Hurricane Milton has claimed at least five lives in the US state of Florida. North America correspondent Barbara Miller reports.
Rescue work is continuing, but Milton did not cause the level of death and destruction authorities had feared was possible. But a number of people are known to have died in tornadoes spawned by the Category 3 storm, which made landfall near Sarasota on Florida's west coast. President Biden has called on Donald Trump to stop the spread of what he says is misinformation about the administration's response to Milton and Hurricane Helene.
Former President Trump, get a life, man. Help these people.
Milton has left millions without power. Barbara Miller, ABC News.
The Prime Minister will today meet with Japan's new Prime Minister, Shigeru Ishiba, while also attending the East Asia Summit in Laos. Political reporter Tom Lowry is travelling with Anthony Albanese.
Mr. Albanese will start the final day of the ASEAN Summit in Laos, making a renewed pitch to Southeast Asia's business leaders that Australia is ready to invest in the region. The government has made Australian investment in Southeast Asia a priority, warning Australian businesses they risk missing out on an economic boom. He'll also attend the East Asia Summit alongside leaders and representatives from Japan, the United States, Russia and China, where regional stability will be a key focus. And the PM will meet for the first time with Shigeru Ishiba, the new Prime Minister of Japan.
Australians will learn more about plans to regulate social media platforms on the second day of a summit in Adelaide. Bethany Alderson reports.
We expect to hear more from the South Australian Premier, Peter Malinauskas, who has actually spearheaded the proposed state ban on social media for teenagers here. We'll also hear from the Federal Communications Minister, Michelle Rowland, who is set to reveal legislation which will be introduced by the end of the year that will put the onus of the ban on social media companies rather than parents and young people. people. She says that this legislation will be overseen by the eSafety Commissioner, but says that penalties will not feature in the government's design. She says that the aim is to put the handbrake on the harms from social media.
This is ABC News. South Australia's Trade and Investment Minister says yesterday's lifting of the lobster ban between Australia and China will benefit regional towns and businesses. China has agreed to lift the ban on Australian live rock lobster imports after a meeting between the Prime Minister Anthony Albanese and the Chinese Premier Li Qiang. South Australia's Trade Minister Joe Sokach says the resumption benefits the state's economy.
It's really good for South Australia. It's great for our fishing industry, but this has had a disproportionate impact on regional communities where our lobster, our premium world-class lobster is fished. So this is great news, a testament to the extraordinarily hard work of governments from the state and Commonwealth.
The Queensland Premier Stephen Miles will be on the election campaign trail in Brisbane today, while the state opposition leader is in Mackay. Kira Jones reports.
Mr Miles has pledged a pharmacy pilot program which allows pharmacists to prescribe the contraceptive pill and medications for conditions including UTIs would be made permanent if Labor is re-elected. Meantime, LNP leader David Crisafulli has promised more than $21 million to deal with the backlog of cases delayed by issues at the state's DNA lab, if elected. Mr Crisafulli has spent the last two nights in Mackay, a seat held by Labor for more than a century. There are just 15 days until Queenslanders head to the polls.
ACT Chief Minister Andrew Barr has suggested Labor could end its formal coalition with the Greens if the party is able to form government after next week's election. Labor has governed with the support of the Greens since 2008. In the last term, the minor party has provided three of the nine cabinet ministers. Tensions between the governing partners increased during the final assembly sitting week of before the campaign. Mr Barr telling Stateline he's open to negotiating with other minor parties or independents to reach a majority.
In an ideal scenario, if we don't have a majority, then having a range of potential partners or pathways to a 13th vote would be helpful.
The life expectancy of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders is still about 20 years less than non-Indigenous Australians. The data from the Australian Bureau of Statistics also shows the Northern Territory has the highest Indigenous mortality rate and the highest suicide rate. President of the Australian Medical Association, Dr. Danielle McMullins, says the data is largely due to the lack of access to health services in remote communities.
There are a number of more remote communities. Most of the Northern Territory is a rural and regional area that we know also exacerbates poorer health outcomes. And I think the combination of that rurality and really needing to get better health services in to support those communities are all contributing factors.
Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky has visited London to meet with the British Prime Minister as part of a whirlwind trip across Europe. Europe correspondent Catherine Diss has more.
With Hurricane Milton derailing a much-anticipated meeting of allies in Germany, the Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky travelled to the UK to meet with British Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer. The President is trying to whip up more Western military aid ahead of what many are predicting will be a long, hard winter, and before the upcoming US election, which throws up many questions as to what American support will look like after November. Catherine Diss, ABC News, London.
American rapper Sean Diddy Combs will stand trial on federal sex trafficking and racketeering charges starting on the 5th of May next year. An American judge made the ruling during the hip-hop mogul's third court appearance since his September arrest. The 54-year-old has pleaded not guilty to a three-count indictment charging him with using his business empire to transport women and male sex workers across state lines to take part in recorded sexual performances called freak-offs. Now with sport, here's Jared Coote.
22-time tennis Grand Slam champion Rafael Nadal says he will retire from the sport after the Davis Cup finals next month. The 38-year-old Spaniard indicated that his decision was related to persistent injury problems that had resulted in what he called difficult years in tennis. Nadal says it wasn't an easy decision.
It's obviously a difficult decision, one that has taken me some time to make, but in this life, everything has a beginning and an end. But I think it's time to put an end to a career that has been long and much more successful than I could have ever imagined.
The Socceroos have come from behind to beat China 3-1 at Adelaide Oval, handing Tony Popovich victory in his first match as coach. Goals to Lewis Miller, Craig Goodwin, and a debut goal to Nishan Velupillay gave the Socceroos a much-needed victory to kickstart their World Cup third-round qualification campaign. The Socceroos next face Japan in Saitama next week. And Port Adelaide has moved into the AFLW's top eight with an 8-point victory over Collingwood. The Power scored 3 goals in the third quarter in the 4 goals 9-33 to 3-7-25 victory.
And you are up to date with the latest ABC News.
Across Australia, you're listening to Breakfast on RN.
Good morning and welcome to AM. I'm Sally Sara, coming to you from Ngunnawal country in Canberra and acknowledging other custodians. Lebanon's Civil Defence Department says 5 of its emergency workers have been killed by an Israeli airstrike in the country's south. The deaths follow a number of incidents in which Lebanese firefighters and paramedics say they've been fired upon or warned by the Israeli military not to rescue people or put out fires caused by bombing. Israel says it's been striking the infrastructure of the militant group Hezbollah, but emergency teams say the Israeli threats are making the impact of the strikes worse and leading to more deaths. At least 18 people have been killed in separate airstrikes in central Beirut. From Beirut, Middle East correspondent Eric Torchek reports.
An apartment building burns in southern Beirut after being hit by an Israeli missile. Firefighters are there, but they're not sure how long they'll be able to stay. The district's fire brigade commander, Saad al-Ahmar, says his teams often receive calls from the Israeli military telling them to withdraw before they can finish their work.
At certain moments, we receive several phone calls from the Israeli enemy warning us when we are working in a certain place to remove your guys from there because we are going to strike them. We try to stay a bit longer to try to rescue as many poor civilians as we can. Then we'll get another phone call saying, if you are stubborn and don't leave, we will bomb you.
Mr. Al-Ahmar speaks to one of his team in the field, asking if they've been able to recover a body from a building after 4 days of trying. Saad al-Ahmar was a senior firefighter during the last war between Hezbollah and Israel, but says he's never experienced conditions like the current bombardment.
The scale of destruction that's happening is much greater. More than one building is being destroyed at a time, and the fires keep burning from one day to the other. We're not able to put it out or contain it because of what's inside of the bombs. We don't know what they are using.
The Civil Defence Department says at least 5 Lebanese firefighters were killed this week in an Israeli airstrike on their headquarters in a village in the country's south. Paramedics are also reporting being fired upon or being told to withdraw before they can pick up casualties. The director of the Lebanese Red Cross, Qasem Shahlan, says paramedics were nearly hit by an airstrike which killed soldiers from Lebanon's armed forces, which is not fighting Israel.
One of the muscles next to the Red Cross, like we were doing evacuation, and we had, other convoy for the Lebanese Army forces where we have 2 died from the Lebanese Army.
Mr. Shahlan says Red Cross paramedics, who are volunteers, must be protected and allowed to provide medical care.
Our key message is really to respect Geneva Convention. Civilians, they are not part of the conflict, they are not part of the war. We need to protect all the health workers in order to do their job safely, to help everyone.
Israel's military has previously accused one paramedic organisation, not the Red Cross, of transporting weapons for Hezbollah. The ABC asked the Israeli military whether it was firing on emergency workers and forcing them to withdraw from impact sites, but is yet to receive a response. From Beirut, this is Eric Twarczyk reporting for AM.
Hurricane Milton has killed at least 10 people and caused widespread destruction in the US state of Florida. But the worst fears about Milton's potential impact have not been realised. This morning, many residents are taking stock of the damage caused by the Category 3 storm. North America correspondent Barbara Miller compiled this report.
Second half was the worst. That's where our walls were flexing on our house. We didn't know how we were going to do.
For those who lived through Hurricane Milton, it was a terrifying experience.
Oh, it was loud. I mean, it was just bang, bang. You can hear it on the roof. You can hear it on the hitting the windows.
Me and my children hopped on the oven. And once we hopped on the oven, I called my mom and told my mom, I think me and my children are about to drown to death.
Milton made landfall as a Category 3 storm near Sarasota on Florida's west coast. It spawned deadly tornadoes, dumped almost 50 centimetres of rain near Tampa, ripped the roof off a sports stadium, and has left millions without power. Residents trapped by floodwaters in apartments and homes are still being rescued by emergency workers. But there's a sense in Florida that Milton, which crossed the Gulf of Mexico as a Category 5 storm, could have been much worse. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis.
The storm did not produce the worst case scenario in terms of storm surge. The storm did weaken before it hit land, and then it did bear further to the east and south of Tampa Bay.
It's 2 weeks since Florida and five other states were hit by Hurricane Helene, which has claimed well over 200 lives. Both storms have hit in the final weeks of campaigning before the presidential election. Republican candidate Donald Trump has accused the Biden administration of not adequately responding.
Hopefully on January 20th, you're going to have somebody that's really going to help you and help you like never before, because help is on the way. Together, we will rebuild, we will recover, and we will come back stronger, bigger, better than ever before.
President Joe Biden has accused Trump and his allies of spreading misinformation and fueling dangerous conspiracy theories.
These lies are also harmful to those who most need help. Lives are on the line. People are in desperate situations. Have the decency to tell them the truth. Mr. President Trump, former President Trump, get a life, man. Help these people.
For anyone following the fate of a cat rescued by a media crew as the storm approached, Millie, as she's been named by the photographer who found her, has been taken to a pet hospital. But she's not microchipped. The photographer says if she's not claimed, he's applied to adopt her. I miss her already, he posted. This is Barbara Miller reporting for AM.
You're listening to AM, where it's coming up to 17 minutes past 7. And for more news, you can download the ABC Listen app. Coming up this morning on RN Breakfast, Patricia Karvelas speaks with the Shadow Foreign Minister, Simon Birmingham. Australian lobster exporters are breathing a sigh of relief that their product will be back on Chinese dining tables by early next year. The Prime Minister announced that he'd reached an agreement with his Chinese counterpart during a meeting of ASEAN to lift bans that had been in place for more than 4 years. But re-entering the Chinese market hasn't been smooth for other products affected by trade restrictions as the Chinese economy struggles through a downturn. East Asia correspondent Kathleen Calderwood has more.
For South Australian lobster exporter Andrew Ferguson, it's welcome news.
Very surprised to hear the news come out of the blue like that. Delighted, actually, and relief as well.
Over the past 2 years, Beijing has gradually lifted trade restrictions it put on a variety of Australian products worth about $20 billion. But it wasn't clear when the door would reopen for lobster.
It was difficult. I think not knowing is always a hard emotion to deal with. It was difficult to lose a market straight off that we relied on for 98% of your income, and then sort of have to rekindle a business and find other markets and other products to develop.
The bans and tariffs on products including wine, barley and coal were a legacy of the acrimonious relationship between China and Australia. Lobsters were the last major industry to still be impacted, although two individual red meat processes continue to be suspended. CEO of the Australian Meat Industry Council, Patrick Hutchinson, says there's optimism these final bans will be lifted soon.
I see this as a good outcome, not just for lobster, but also for red meat, but also for Australia moving forward, that rather than try to get back what we have lost, it is also about then increasing where possible and expanding the market to our biggest trading nation.
But it's been a different story for Australian wine. In the months after the tariffs on bottled wine were lifted, exports surged worth more than $340 million from April to June. But the numbers dropped right off in July, and it's still hard to find an Australian drop in bars and restaurants in China. As the country's economy struggles and confidence among everyday Chinese people remains low, Beijing-based wine writer Jim Boyce says the pain is being felt across the wine industry.
Wine is an easy luxury to give up. It's a newly acquired luxury for many people, and it's quite expensive here. So if you're going to give anything up, that's it's what you're going to give up.
That's something that's front of mind for lobster exporter Andrew Ferguson, but he hopes the work they've done to diversify while the bans were in place will give them a safety net.
The state of the economy is a concern. I know that they're not going to be paying the high prices, and the worries, I suppose, in finding our way back into China is seeing the diversity that's happened in their marketplace as well, replacing us, our product with other products. You know, just going to wet markets and seeing the Russian crabs and all the lobsters from the rest of the world, we've got to compete.
This is Kathleen Calderwood reporting from Taipei for AM.
The federal government has welcomed the lifting of restrictions on Australian live lobster exports to China. Julie Collins is the Federal Minister for Agriculture, Fisheries and Forestry. I spoke to her a short time ago. How would you describe the trade relationship currently between Australia and China?
Well, we've been working very hard to stabilise our bilateral relationship with China. I think what this shows is that we have worked carefully, cautiously and consistently to repair relationships with China. We started with a $20 billion trade impediment. Last financial year, we had around $170 billion worth of trade with China. So we have been working consistently and calmly to repair that relationship.
Producers of other products that have been allowed back into China, it hasn't always been smooth sailing. There have been some challenges there. How aware are you of that, and what sort of support will be offered to the lobster producers?
Yeah, we will be working with the lobster producers. We already had a meeting with them yesterday about the timetable that has been agreed to and how we go through that. What we want to do is make sure that it's a smooth transition and work with the industry and the sector to make sure that we're doing everything we can do as a government to smooth the way.
Is China a trusted partner now, do you think?
Well, we're very pleased to be able to get our live rock lobster into the Chinese market before the end of the year and indeed the Chinese New Year. We've had return of a whole range of products in terms of our trade with China. As Minister for Agriculture, I'm very pleased with the success of our agricultural exports to China and around the world.
Were the trade restrictions on rock lobster, were they ever justified in your view?
Look, we've been working with our Chinese partners, as I've said, slowly removing some of the trade impediments. I think what we've seen is great success by working calmly, cautiously and carefully with the Chinese government and making sure that as a government we're doing everything we can to get our products back into China.
How does the government see the relationship overall? We've got trade issues such as this, but we've also had issues with defence and the release of chafe in front of an Australian aircraft. How much is Australia willing to put up with?
Look, it's in the interest of both of our countries to make sure that we continue to stabilise our relationship. This resumption in trade for Australian agricultural products and commodities is an important part. It helps us having dialogue to navigate our differences and build where we can cooperate without compromising any Australian interests, and we've been pretty clear about that.
What's your message to the industry?
My message to the industry is we'll continue to work with you. We want to make sure that this transition is as smooth as possible. As a government, we've been working very closely with Chinese counterparts to make sure that we make it as smooth as possible.
How much damage has been done to the industry during this period in which it's been effectively locked out of the Chinese market, given the market was so dominant for our producers?
Yeah, certainly in my discussions with our producers in Australia, they have been having a tough time. This news will certainly be welcomed by the producers. The Minister for Trade and I had a meeting with them just a few weeks ago about how things were travelling in the industry and the sector, and I think that this news will be very welcome indeed.
That's Julie Collins there, the Federal Minister for Agriculture, Fisheries and Forestry. A telehealth company is under fire for continuing to send medicinal cannabis to the family of a man who took his own life after being prescribed the medication. The founder of the company has been banned from supplying or handling medicinal cannabis, and two doctors working for the platform have been suspended amid an investigation by the medical regulator. National Health reporter Elise Worthington joined me earlier. Elise, there's been a proliferation of telehealth companies offering medicinal cannabis prescriptions. Tell us about this company called Dispensed.
Well, Dispensed is one of those many online telehealth companies that's doing these kinds of prescriptions through a subscription model. And they're doing it through an online eligibility quiz that's then reviewed by a doctor or nurse during an appointment. Now, it's been on our radar for a while because we saw quite a few complaints about it online. And I heard from the mother of a patient who told me her son had been prescribed medicinal cannabis through the platform, despite multiple warnings from her in writing that her son actually lives lives with schizophrenia and she was concerned he was at risk of psychosis. They confirmed that information went to his medical team, but they continued to sell him cannabis at least four more times over the next 6 weeks. And in that time, his condition rapidly deteriorated. And then in March, he was eventually hospitalised involuntarily. And then even after the mother told the company that he was now in hospital, they contacted him again and offered another appointment and more cannabis.
Tell us about the other case you've discovered.
Well, sadly, we've also discovered that there's been a 41-year-old New South Wales man who's taken his own life in February this year, who was another patient of Dispensed. Now, his dad told me that his son was brilliant and intelligent and had completed three university degrees, but also struggled with auditory hallucinations, which he'd had since he was a teenager. Now, he was on antipsychotics, but was also prescribed medicinal cannabis through the Dispensed telehealth platform. Sadly, his condition deteriorated as well, and he died by suicide earlier this year. Now, his family told me they're really concerned that he was able to be prescribed this medication without his normal GP or psychiatrist knowing about it. They said that after they contacted Dispensed to tell them that their son had ended his life, the company actually continued to post two more packages of medicinal cannabis to their dead son, and that's really exacerbated their grief and made everything worse.
So, Lisa, overall, what has this company Dispensed, what's it said about some of these allegations?
Well, we put a really detailed list of questions to the company several days ago, and they didn't respond to them specifically. They did issue a statement via their legal department saying they couldn't respond to some questions due to privacy and confidentiality obligations, but said they're currently engaging with regulators in relation to some of the matters that we raised. But they did say they don't accept the allegations, but wouldn't say exactly which they didn't accept, and that they can't make any further public comments. And we know that the medical board is now investigating two doctors who were prescribing medicinal cannabis through the company, and that the founding pharmacist of Dispensed has been banned from supplying medicinal cannabis as well.
That's Elise Worthington reporting there. And if this story's raised any concerns for you or anyone you know, you can call Lifeline on 13 11 14. The tennis world is marking the achievements of one of the greatest players of all time, with Rafael Nadal announcing his retirement. The 22 Grand Slam champion will leave the sport professionally after dealing with persistent injuries. Kathleen Ferguson reports.
Rafael Nadal has earned his title as the King of Clay. He's won 22 Grand Slams, including two Australian Open tournaments, as well as a record 14 French Open titles. But the 38-year-old has revealed he's winding up his career as a professional tennis player.
Rafael Nadal.
La realidad es que han sido...
The reality is that it has been some difficult years, these last two especially. I don't think I've been able to play without limitations. It is obviously a difficult decision, one that has taken me some time to make.
Posting the announcement in a video on social media, he said his last games would be played at the Davis Cup Finals in Spain next month.
I think in life, everything has a beginning and an end, and I think it's the appropriate time to put an end to a career that has been long and much more successful than I could have ever imagined. But I am very excited that my last tournament will be the final of the Davis Cup and representing my country.
Despite his struggles with injuries, the announcement has still shocked many. Jannik Sinner is the current world number one tennis player.
Well, it's a, you know, tough news for, I think, all the tennis world, and not only. That what I can say, I was very lucky to get to know him.
Australian tennis legend Rod Laver wrote on social media, "Another tough one. Retirement is inevitable, but I'm going to miss watching this bloke fight for every point like no other." Another tennis great of equal fame, Roger Federer, said on Instagram, "What a career, Rafa. I always hoped this day would never come. Thank you for the unforgettable memories." Rafael Nadal's uncle and former coach Tony Nadal says his nephew was inspiring to watch.
Rafa on the court was a passionate person who always wanted to fight for his dreams.
He says his success wasn't just about his ability, but his character.
The main reasons my nephew has been able to enjoy such a long career, despite all the problems he had, is because he knew how to face adversity with dignity.
It's Rafael Nadal's uncle and former coach Tony Nadal ending that report from Kathleen Ferguson. In finance, the Australian dollar is buying 67.3 US cents. And that is AM. I'm Sally Sara. It is 7:30 and good morning to Patricia Carvelis.
Good morning, Sally, and good morning to you. You're listening to ABC Radio National Breakfast. The top stories we're following this Friday morning. Australian rock lobster producers have welcomed the final trade ban being lifted by China. But how quickly will it return to Chinese menus? Shortly I'll speak with a man who was the trade minister when those tariffs were introduced. The now opposition foreign affairs spokesman Simon Birmingham joins us next. Also this morning with the Prime Minister in Laos for the ASEAN summit. We'll take a look at the pressure being applied to Australia to strengthen sanctions on Myanmar. That conversation coming up after 8 o'clock. First, Richard Crabtree is here with an update of the news headlines at 7:30. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning, PK. United Nations peacekeeping forces in southern Lebanon say their headquarters have been repeatedly struck by Israeli forces in the last 24 hours. Two peacekeepers have been injured in the damage. Israel's ambassador to the UN said peacekeepers should pull back 5 kilometres from the Israel-Lebanon border to avoid danger. A central neighbourhood in Beirut has been struck by Israel for the first time this morning, killing at least 18 people and injuring around 100 others. Israel had issued warnings for parts of Beirut's southern suburbs, but not this area of the city. Reports suggest a senior Hezbollah official was the target of the attacks. In the United States, at least 10 people are dead after Hurricane Milton tore through Florida. Authorities say the worst-case scenario from the storm was avoided. However, damage is still significant. Samoa's government is warning residents in the country's southwest